I have to start with some of my philosophy and beliefs of what the industry is doing poorly. They're copying the Big Four. The Big Four is not just an accounting firm. They're giant conglomerates, international. It's insane for us small accounting firm owners to think we should do things the way that they do things. And by the way they do things is they bring people in, they squeeze every ounce of desire out of the person to do accounting, and then they jump ship and go some private company.
May I have your attention, please? May I have your attention, please? I repeat, may I have your attention, please?
This is another public service announcement brought to you in part
by Accounting High.
The views and events expressed here are
of the next generation of accounting and tech professionals leading this space.
The events and suggestions are not to be taken lightly. Children should not partake in the listening
of this podcast.
Anything else?
Yeah.
So without further ado, introducing the star of our show,
Jason Ackerman and Scott Scarano.
We're going to have a problem here.
And our special guest, John Brintz, a name I can say. John, welcome to the Sons of CPAs.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
So I met with John earlier this year or last year?
Yeah, this year.
Learned a little bit more about what he's got going on, and I was excited to have him on. It's innovative. So tell us the name of your firm, and tell us the size of your firm, how many people you have, and how much money do you make? So start right there.
Great. So the name of our firm is Insight Tax, and that's spelled like the incite to cause to action, usually used in the form of someone incited a riot. So it's an aggressive word because we feel like we need to be a little bit more aggressive. From our standpoint, too many accountants seem like they end up working for the government instead of the clients. We think
that's
the government
sucks. So funny you say that, because I've been reviewing a lot of tax returns, and I feel like our team is too conservative with what they're doing.
Interesting. Anyway, so that's where the insight comes from, Insight Tax. We are currently 33 people located in Salt Lake City. And so you want revenue size for the firm? Is that?
Sure.
Yeah, so we'll do a little more than $5 million in revenue this year.
Okay.
That's and good.
What's your margins?
Well, if you take out my owner's pay to show true margins.
And you, sure. Are you the 100% owner?
100% owner.
Oh, I love it. Dictatorship, baby.
About 22% margins when you take out my pay. Okay. And the other benefits that you can take with the tax code.
All right. This is a great start.
How many cars do you own in the business?
Cars? Just the one. Just my one car.
How aggressive are you with your personal
taxes? So I'm...
I'm aggressive. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
About as aggressive as the next tax preparer. But I don't know.
I'm probably more aggressive, I think, than most accountants we come across. But at the end of the day, we still, if we get audited ourselves, have to be able to defend the positions we take.
So give me some examples of where you think accountants in general are too conservative.
I mean, have you guys heard of the Augusta rule?
It's the master's week, baby, of course.
Yeah, so that whole rule that I believe the tax code's like 280A G2 or something. But I'm shocked at how many of our clients, when we explain it to them or they read our blog and they take it to their current accountant, this is before they come over, their accountant's like, oh, you can't do this. They get it confused with like renting your home office, which is not the same tax rule. Anyways, that's one area. It's like, it's clearly in the code. I personally have been through an audit with a client who used the strategy and we passed.
So you're talking about you rent your own home to your business for 14 days.
Yep.
And you don't have to pay tax on it because it's running for less than 14
days. Because it's less than 14 days, exactly. You'd be shocked at how many CPAs don't. They look at that rule and they're like, no, you can't do that. Like, I mean, I feel like it's pretty clear in the code.
Well, maybe they think because they have never done it, they're trying to justify them not doing it or using it with clients. So then they say, well, we have never done it for you because you can't. You know, if a client brings it up to them and then says they want to do this.
Sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I guess I've
I think it's more you just don't trust your clients to document it right. Or to say that, you know, they're renting their own house. Like, how do you figure out the fair market value for rent and do it properly?
Yeah.
But maybe, I mean, you said that's a place where we should be more aggressive.
The definitely areas to be aggressive. You can get comparable quotes to justify whatever amount you are actually claiming. That's not saying you can't make up an amount and find something that justifies it. What I'm saying is you can find a viable market equivalent and use that number.
Well, yeah, you just go look up Airbnbs now in your local area. That probably gives you a decent market rate.
It gives you a great decent.
So what do you make them document, like the reason for business that they are renting it to themselves?
Yeah, they need to have meeting minutes for their monthly meeting. So we suggest it's the purpose is to have your monthly board meeting at your house. And then so you would need meeting minutes to show what was discussed in that meeting.
Aha. I like this. I like where you're going here. Do you have
Scott's about to have some meeting minutes today.
I've already had plenty of meetings at my home, and I've never done that on my return, to be honest. So I'm going to do that for my return. It hasn't been filed yet this year. I'm
gonna have some
reclassify some meetings.
You shouldn't have said that on a recorded line, but that's fine.
It's all right.
The IRS doesn't look at things to improve themselves, so I somehow don't feel like they're listening to podcasts, any podcasts.
Well, my uncle works for the IRS and he listens to this podcast, but that's just because he's my uncle.
So when you're meeting with a new client, like, so you tell them the adjuster rule, what else do you yeah. say?
So in general, the idea we use is like, look, the tax code talks about necessary, ordinary, helpful, appropriate, right? Those words of what can you write off as a business? But those don't actually mean anything to the average person, like our average client. Helpful, all of it's helpful and appropriate. I mean, I had a guy tried to write off a $100,000 belt buckle. We're not that aggressive. Like, that probably more of a collective $100,000 belt buckle. I wish I was exaggerating about that, but he was serious. Because he's like, well, this was totally appropriate and helpful for me to get on stage and show people how much money I make so that they join. You know, this guy was like a big network marketing guy, had a huge downline. Well, we just explained to them, like, look, at the end of the day, the way to think about it is if you can relate it to your business and you can have that conversation with an IRS auditor of how it helped your business in any form, shape, or fashion, then that is a tax deduction. You just have to document it, especially the ones that look a little bit more crazy. And then our job is to then, when we look at them and they have questions, to find some of them that specifically have exclusions in the tax code. But other than that, I want them coming from the angle of everything that I'm doing is possibly a write-off versus the other way of what are the few things that I'm doing that I can expense.
Yeah. Yeah. So you take an all for nothing approach, or let's try to get it all on there. What about those business owners that just commingle absolutely everything and say, this was all business? What's your standard boilerplate response for that?
Our standard boilerplate is, well, if you're audited client, you are going to pay a lot in extra taxes, and then you'll have penalties on top of it. So let's change some of your behaviors. Let's use a personal card for your personal expenses. Let's get a card designated for your business expenses, and let's stop commingling. Plus, when you commingle, it's a lot harder for you to argue the aggressive deductions you want to take because the IRS is just going to say you took everything. And so you're coming already in with from a bad foot, like an argument standpoint. Let's give us strong footing when we go and like, here's the personal card. They didn't write any of that off. Here's the business stuff. This is what they wrote off to clearly show that you are thinking about it. We've had to have the commingle conversation for sure.
So you got a lot of varying shades of gray in your office. Ackerman said, he said he liked the zen of your office. I don't see any blacks in there. I see a lot of different shades of gray. And I'm wondering, even your hair, like, I'm wondering if that's intentional. If the gray, like you playing in the gray areas of the tax code,
that's
you know, there's a lot of black and whites, but you've definitely got a lot of grays in there.
Yeah, definitely not intentional. And that's more of a blue in the back. I just, with the glare, I have my blinds closed a little bit. So blues and grays.
So you didn't purposely dye your hair gray to be in the gray for the tats, Jones.
I wish I could say that. No, this is all natural.
You got 50 shades of gray there. Even that painting is very gray.
So. Yeah, that's true.
So it's inciting a riot.
But so your firm is, you're tax focused, and you're focused on doing, you know, helping people save money by tax planning, right? Which is a big thing. So many firms are going away from taxes and trying to do more bookkeeping. They don't want to do individual tax returns. I guess you seem to be going the opposite way.
Well, that's a great observation. Opposite way, I don't know if I'd say opposite way. I'm certainly aware of the AI that exists that could make it where personal tax prep is a thing of the past, where even the TurboTaxes of the world might be out of business because maybe they make the next competitor evolution of the AI pulling stuff. We certainly prefer not to do just individual returns. Our focus is on the business owner. We do have a growing bookkeeping side. I mean, I would say revenue-wise, about 65% of our revenue is tax-focused. But then the other 35% is a mix of bookkeeping revenue and then some cash flow consulting stuff that we do. And I get the reason. I think the reason most people go that direction is because of the TurboTaxes and H&R Blocks and Jackson Hewitts of the world, there's an element of people feeling like tax prep is a commodity and there's not a lot of value there. And I'm happy to, my opinion is, if they're just a W-2, itemized deductions, maybe even some stock transactions, that is a commodity service. I mean, you could pay a professional to do all the work for you, and the value you get is it saves you, the client saves their weekend, and we have clients, like, great, you want to pay us for our time to do that work, that's fine. But know that if you did this yourself in TurboTax, it's pretty much going to be the exact same answer, because those specific things you have in your life, it's clearly black and white the way those are taxed. But when you get into the business return, now you have some room, like you're juggling a couple different balls, right? And so is it better to take this specific expense as a business expense, or is it better to take it as an itemized deduction, or like just the different ways you can play with some of the numbers that are going on in their personal life? And you do the personal return to see the actual outcome of the decisions you made on the business return. Because for us personally, I mean, we might have 30 C Corp returns. The majority of our business clients, more than 1,000, they're flow through entities. And so all our strategies come to fruition on the personal return. So we see it that way. But people are professionals, so CPAs, it's higher margin to do the other services, right? If I can get in their bookkeeping and some cash flow consulting or business advising, whatever form they want to call it, outsource CFO services. I mean, honestly, people,
Is it higher margin though?
It should be. We found clients are willing to pay more for that than just
the tax
return. You think
clients are willing to pay more for the bookkeeping than for the tax work?
For the advising from like the outflow of the bookkeeping. For the CFO work, yeah. The bookkeeping itself is still in that realm of.
I'm more interested to hear your interpretation of all this, because you were going into that. You were saying, you know, the outsourced CFO and what everybody calls it. Honestly, what is your interpretation of that?
Yeah,
how you guys handle it?
We just come up with fancy names, and I think all of us are effectively doing the same thing. We're looking at the business financial numbers, and we're giving them advice on how they can become more profitable and or save less money. The term CFO has become such a generic phrase. As CPAs, we need to be careful about just using that phrase because our clients don't understand it. Because you might be saying CFO work, and you're thinking, I'm going to help you reduce your expenses. And they're thinking, you're going to help me get a loan. So we really need to be careful, I think, if we're serving clients in that role, to be really clear what exactly were the services that we're asking for or that they're expecting us to give. Because we have clients that have been frustrated with us when it's like, yeah, I want you to do my bookkeeping. And then 3 months in, they're like, I don't understand. You're not giving me any advice or anything. Like, oh, I'm sorry. Did you miss that part where we said that was a different service? Like bookkeeping, yes. Add-on, we sit down for in-depth meetings and we do some analyzing expense work for you. Like, you know, so a lot of it comes down to managing expectations with them as well.
Yeah, managing the service line and their interpretation of it. So go ahead, Ackerman.
Well, you said you do 1,000 business returns.
1,000 plus, yeah.
That's escorts partnerships.
Mm-hmm.
That sounds like a lot for 33 people. So I guess how many, roughly on average, how many tax returns is a individual CPA at your firm doing?
We want them to be able to do at least 300.
300 a year.
Yeah. We have some that are closer to 600. We have others that are still learning.
People do 600 returns?
Uh-huh.
And what's the average cost of those returns?
So business returns are around 850. Personal returns are around 600. Those are like the starting.
You're doing a partnership return for 850?
Yeah, those are our starting prices.
Oh, man. Wow. That's really low.
That's volume game, too.
Yeah, that's a lot of... So
we played the opposite game of that. We've increased our prices so much that we're not doing that many, but the total top line is roughly the same as what we were doing when we were doing three times.
Yeah, and when we get new CPAs in joining our company, our returns are pretty darn simple. We're working... Like, we kind of are focusing on small business owners who don't have a lot going on, service-based usually, so they're not like... crazy amount of inventory or assets or things like that. So a return could take us 20 minutes.
So for the $850 return, what is the client providing you? And what are you, like, I'm guessing you're not doing any write-up work. They're providing you the trial balance and you just are
Yeah. So for $850, we get the P&L. I mean, if we're doing the trial balance stuff and bookkeeping, then, you know, we're charging for the bookkeeping work.
Is your pricing, do you have fixed pricing?
We try to do fixed pricing whenever possible. Mm-hmm.
Do you price everything up front typically for these
returns?
Yes. Okay.
So how do you like every year look at all those returns and figure out which ones need to go up or down, or how do you make sure the pricing's right on all of them?
So our professionals who sign the tax returns, like it's their client base that they're managing. And so we'll sit down with them and give them some guidance to look at. We do have in our CRM software where we track the clients and projects, we have what we call the PETA box. Pain in the ass. I don't know if we're allowed to, swear.
You can say whatever you want.
You can, okay. Yeah. The fucking dickhole clients is what you're trying to say.
We're going with
I've
PETA.
Never heard that one before. A dickhole client?
Fucking dickhole
client. That's
clients.
Not that, even asshole. That's worse.
It's really bad.
When I hear that, I hear
we have the pain in the ass clients, then we have the dickhole clients. There's two boxes we use.
Oof.
Oh, that's great. We just have the one. So you guys are way more advanced than we are. And so through the course of the year or interactions with them, you know, they're encouraged to put little marks in the box. So that when it comes time to evaluating who's getting a price increase email, we prefer to fire clients that way. Very rarely have we sent out an email just straight up saying, we are no longer going to do your tax work or provide services to you. Most of the time it's in the form of, hey, things have changed around here. Your new price is $5,000.
That's called a passive price increase or a passive firing of client. Yeah.
I'm just trying to understand because it seems like you're really focused on providing advice to clients, but it seems like the pricing of the tax returns doesn't reflect that.
Well, isn't that the add-on service? You compartmentalized the return.
So
the return itself is is the commodity almost. Like it's a service that you're doing that you just said, like TurboTax basically can do this after we've given you all the inputs and we've analyzed everything outside of that. We're not bundling our extra white glove service with our returns. We're pricing the return itself as its own line item.
So how do you do that?
Yeah, so usually those clients, we have them sign a monthly agreement. And it's like if we're doing bookkeeping work and tax work, on the low end, they're probably $700 a month. And that would include their ability to email us questions throughout the year. And a year-end planning meeting, and then, of course, the monthly books with the monthly report from us. And then from there, if they want meetings, then it's more than 700. And if they their tax returns are more complicated, it's more than that. If they want more meetings, just in general. So we kind of look at it that way.
Well, I guess how many of your clients are like that versus how many of them are just straight up tax returns you don't give
Yeah,
them
so
advice?
Right now we're averaging about 250 grand a month in the clients who pay monthly. So I don't know what that works out to be.
If it's 700.
That's 3 million a year. So it's more than 50% of our revenue sign up for the proactive services.
And these are mostly the pass-through business owners.
Yeah, yeah.
That are doing that. Do you bundle their returns in with that monthly, or are you invoicing
we
separately?
We do. Usually cool. We bundle it in. And depending on how many they have, then the price is different. I mean, I had a client last year who has a ton of entities, and he's very involved. And so, you know, he's paying $7,000 a month.
Okay. Yeah. And that's interesting, too, because we just recently moved to that model in the last couple of years where – and our services are similar to yours where everything's pretty much just bundled in, but we don't really, it's a lot of blurred lines between what they're actually paying for. Like we internally have our own prices, but if we're pricing something at like $950 a month, that's basically here. We're going to do all of this for you. So it sounds like are you taking them in on a lower, like we're going to do your taxes this year and then eventually phase them up to a monthly agreement or?
No, we found it's easier just, let's bring them on as monthly. And we have a full-time sales guy as part of our team, that 33. One of them is just, he does sales. And when I say sales, he closes the leads that we naturally get. It's one of the best gigs. I'm wondering actually sometimes if maybe if he and I want to switch positions. My headache.
Well, my job. He just has to breathe.
No, this is cool.
I have more questions on this. This is very fascinating.
Okay, but so let me just finish that thought though. So about 90% of the clients outside of February and March have been brought on a monthly engagement. We just naturally during tax season get an increase in people who are just looking to get their tax work done. And so that percentage, we've definitely added a lot more. Clients that we invoice when we do the actual work versus those who pay for a monthly amount and have the services included in what they pay.
So the one-off clients that you do, is your ultimate goal to get rid of them and just do the monthlies? Or, because it seems like you're kind of in between two worlds here, where you're doing all these one-offs that's taking up a lot of your time, but you're more profitable on these monthly clients.
Well, honestly, I feel like our profitability is pretty high on these one-off clients. I mean, like I said, like I could do a business return and personal return in probably about 25 minutes. It probably took my admin team another 20 minutes to actually get the information and took my data prep person. Well, in fact, it probably took him 20 minutes and it takes me 5 minutes to review it. So, you know, $800 for 45 minutes to an hour worth of work. And if I have the personal return in there, you know, it's, you know, $1,600 for an hour worth of work. That's actually a really good margin. Because again,
well,
our returns are simple.
Well, yeah, it just seems
condensed.
It seems like there's going to be burnout if people are doing 600 tax returns. This is coming from someone who does a lot of tax returns myself. Like, I worry about that for myself.
Yeah, well, burnout's more of a control of overall work hours spent, not the volume. And it's my job as the leader to make sure we have enough capacity to do the returns that we bring on. So, I mean, because now you're getting into employee benefit and structure. And, you know, Scott and I had an amazing conversation when we first met each other about kind of this idea. But my hope and belief, my utopian idea is that I'm going to have a firm where even during tax season, people are only averaging 45 hours of work a week during the tax season period. And outside of tax season, they'll probably be, you know, just the normal 40 hours. And we're not quite there yet, but we don't have anyone working more than 55 hours a week, except for a handful. And we're still working with them on their efficiency to get it down. I think to save the industry, we have to be aware as firm owners, the burden we're putting on our team. So it is a lot of work and volume that we need to do, but we're really efficient at it. And, you know, we just let them know and we communicate with the clients, you know, if we're not getting your return done by the deadline, one, they had a ton of advance notice of when they needed to get us the information for us to guarantee it getting done. And once they're past that point, then it's like, yeah, you know, we will get to it. We'll get to it as soon as we can. You're not going to wait a month, but, you know, we got to protect the team because ultimately they are the ones driving the revenue and doing most of this work.
So how are you monitoring your team? I guess everyone's keeping a timesheet for how often they're working.
Uh-huh. They clock in, they clock out, and then our staff ones actually clock in on each client, because then once a year we do an analysis to see, you know, if we charge the client $850 for a business return, but the hours spent on it were really high, then we know we need to go to the client and say, hey, we're raising your price next year so that we can maintain our profitability.
And the business return, so you're not doing a balance sheet on these $850 returns. You're just doing an income statement.
Well, I mean, they give us a balance sheet. We put it on the tax return if that's what you're asking.
So you are doing a balance sheet. I didn't know if you were doing a balance sheet
for that.
But
the balance sheets are so simple. I mean, we're talking cash, a credit card, maybe some loans. I mean, there's nothing. Like our clients, you'd look at them and be like, oh, I can see what you're saying. You'd probably be able to do one in 10 minutes.
Yeah, we used to do a lot of those returns. Like people that don't have anything, people that manage a convenience store that don't even have any assets. They're just, you know, they just have their bank account, basically.
Exactly.
You know, nothing, no fixed assets.
No, we do a lot of those returns. We just charge $1,500 for them instead of $850.
Oh, good for you.
good for you, Ackerman. That's why Ackerman doesn't track time either. So because he doesn't track time, he just overprices everything because that way they don't have to worry about their capacity issues.
I'm just, because we're very similar in the way that you do stuff. So I'm interested. And I just think this tax season, I don't know how you felt about it, but there's just been such a condensedness to it that
That's because
it's been very complicated and difficult.
That's because it's a regular tax season again. We had 2 years to basically like lift our belt buckles, not $100,000 belt buckles, but you know, they're.
I don't even know where I could find a belt buckle for $100,000.
That's like four Rolexes.
Anyways,
I don't know. I'm looking at chains. I'm sure I could spend $100,000 on a chain, but that's not around my waist. This could be around my neck. So. You said we had an amazing conversation. I have a lot of amazing conversations without Ackerman. Whenever Ackerman gets involved, but let's keep going with your questions.
Is this boring?
It's not for anybody, not for the listener, I'm sure. Not for any tax professionals.
Well, I think there's a lot of people out there that are like John's firm that do the really, like a lot of returns at one time, learning like how you become efficient with it. So what are some of the secrets to your efficiency?
Well, the first one is to identify what is the skill set that your most expensive people have and what is that job task they should be doing because they're the most expensive person. So in our case, the CPAs and the tax professionals who are working towards their CPA, their skill set of actually knowing the tax stuff, they're the most expensive. So we want them spending as much time as possible just doing the tax work. That means gathering source docs information, even inputting the stuff initially, I can use a lower level, new entry level staff one to do a lot of the data prep so that by the time they get to the expensive team member who has most of the knowledge and the relationship with the client, they can finalize it and fix it and button up the tax return really nicely in a very efficient way. The staff ones are less expensive, so let's have them do the data prep. And then we have the admins who are the least expensive, spending their time emailing clients. We still need this document. Hey, you sent us this stuff. Last year you sent us this stuff as well. We're still missing this. And so that's one of the ways we can maintain a good margin by identifying the tasks that are the most time consuming for the person that's the least expensive.
So and don't get me wrong. The workflow of all of this, how is everybody connected? Are they all in an office? Are you using workflow management? What are you?
Yeah, so we use a software called Insightly, not connected to Insight.
You walked into that one.
Yeah.
Not inciting a riot.
Not Inciting Riot. Insights. Separate company. I have nothing to do with it. They developed their own software. It's just super random that that's the name of the software we use.
It's not, though, because you're interesting. Your play on your words is very unique. Like, you took it in a different direction, because I tried to type it out to tell Ackerman what your name of your firm was, and I thought I got auto-corrected, and I tried to respell it, but I spelled it the wrong way. But insights, like, that's what you're providing. You're providing insights, but then you're also taking an interesting juxtaposition, play on that word, that's against the tax guys.
Yeah, phonetically, that is accurate,
You guys have some pretty fucking cool t-shirts, too, if we can talk about those. Like,
In fact, we just got a new one that finally came in. It takes a little bit to think about it.
I don't even get it.
The IRS.
It says, so what I'm looking at is the IRS is not equal to theirs.
That's right.
The IRS, theirs. Aha.
Because it's spelled the exact same way.
It's spelled the exact same way. The IRS is not equal to theirs. And then who's them?
Theirs is the IRS. They come in and they just pretend like it's your money. Like, they might as well, like, well, this is my business. How did you manage my money in my business? You owe me more money.
No,
it's not. Just because they send you a notice saying you owe them money doesn't mean you actually owe them money. It's not their money. It's not theirs. It's yours.
So maybe you should put in the next iteration of that shirt, the IRS's money in a dollar sign is not equal to their money.
I think it's a great shirt.
I'm kidding.
Thanks.
You got a lot of really cool shirts, like taxes suck and things like that.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's like you're the...
Let's go back to the how they manage making this all efficient.
Yeah, the workflow insight. We went off track.
It is not a software that was designated or designed specifically for accounting firms. We currently are dabbling a little bit with Canopy, which I think is a little bit more popular software for tax firms. They happen to have their headquarters.
Yeah, they're in Utah.
20 minutes south of where our office is, and they've come in. It's funny. They came in and brought like 11 team members to look at our processes and everything, effectively, not intentionally, but basically trying to steal our IP so they could improve their software. And we brought them in because we wanted to show them, because we were planning to use it, and I would love your software to match all the stuff that we do. And then, you know, they're like, hey, can you send us all these other documents that you have? I'm like, I can, but I know that if we add my process to your software, the value of your company is going to skyrocket. So if you want to do this, I'm going to need a massive consulting agreement with you. And it's not going to be cheap, because I know how much value this would bring. But anyway, so we've dabbled with Canopy. We currently use Insightly. We've just customized it enough that it works really well for us. All of our team has access to Insightly. And it all starts when you bring in the new client. You've got to set up your system the right way when they come in. And by doing it the right way, now our system automatically tells us when work needs to be done for that client. So we don't drop the balls on anything, and we can see what the status is at any given time. So at the beginning of the year, all the projects are created in our Insightly software. So we know these are all the tax returns that need to be worked on. And each position and responsibility, they all know where their responsibility lies in the process. So the admins start with the gather source doc. So at the beginning of the year, they're very busy. They're emailing clients. They're sending out lists of this is what you gave us last year. This is what we need. Reminders. They're getting the documents. They're putting it into a PDF, one PDF. I know you guys have seen this when the client sends us like 50 different one pages of all our documents, and there's 50 PDFs. So it's the admin's job to consolidate those into one file so that then it passes.
Got thumbs or fingers in each one of those too, because they're taking it. They're taking the pictures with their phones.
And so then once they have the documents, they pass it on to the tax professional. Our entry-level person, they do the data entry. It gets reviewed because we're obviously trying to grow the entry-level people and improve their knowledge. So there's a lot of hand-holding and oversight on that. It gets reviewed by a tax manager. Then the person who's going to sign the return is the one who gets it last. And then they sign off on the return and make whatever changes they want. We email the client. And so every step of the way, we're tracking where the tax return process is for the client and what we need from them to move it to the next step.
So you're just, are you using a special software to email them or keep track of what you're missing, or it's just all
on Insightly.
So there, is there like a list, like a client has these 7 K1s and W2 and blah, 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 send us that, or the admin's just emailing it to them, a list?
We have used a list in the past. Half of the team still uses it, the other half doesn't, and I think the other half that didn't wants to reutilize the list, where they update it every year with, like, this is what they sent us, so that next year when they get into it, it's already marked. That's definitely an area of efficiency that's on our list to improve over the next year.
What's the TAT software you use?
We use Lacerte.
Can I ask why have you looked at Intuit TATS online?
No, is that Lacerte online?
Basically, yeah.
We have enough, just so you know, we have enough volume that I pay a flat amount every year for basically unlimited use.
No, I know, but what I'm saying is Intuit, like, you know, Intuit bought Lacerte, and they basically have built a cloud-based version of Lacerte. And I'm interested in it because it's the only cloud, like 100% cloud product. So I'm always interested when Lacerte people, we use at CCH, and it would be a pain in the ass to switch to Intuit. But
yeah,
for you, it wouldn't be that complicated.
That's also on our list. We've moved up half of our stuff to cloud-based. Currently in the process of switching IT companies to figure out how to move the other stuff. But no, we definitely want to move more cloud-based because most of our recent hires have been remote team members.
What's the makeup of remote versus in office?
So we have 33 total, and there's 7 who are remote.
Okay. Can you tell, is it okay if we go into the structure of the firm too?
Sure.
I want to talk about the licensees.
Is that what we call it.
So that, and then also just how you have your management team structured too.
Yeah. So I guess first to explain this, I have to start with some of my philosophy and beliefs of what the industry's doing poorly. One is they're copying the Big Four, which I don't know if anyone's ever looked into it. The Big Four is not just an accounting firm. At this point, they're giant conglomerates, international. It's insane for us small accounting firm owners to think we should do things the way that they do things. And by the way they do things is they bring people in, they squeeze every ounce of desire out of the person to do accounting, and then they jump ship and go to some private company. Now they're working on one company. This is a problem. We're already seeing this where we have a bunch of accountants wanting to retire, and the decline in accounting programs across the country is down. So we're going to have a massive supply problem. And we're going to end up having to raise our prices, like supply-demand theory demands or whatever. And now small businesses who are the backbone of our economy aren't even going to be able to afford our services. So they're going to have to go to some other option that isn't as qualified. And who knows what that's going to lead to. So I did not want to follow that model. I think one of the reasons that there's such a burnout is because there's no true career path for the accountant in the Big Four or the firms that copy them. Oh, I'm going to make partners someday. Yeah, if you look at the data, that's 10 to 14 years of working 60 to 80 hours a week. And oh, surprise, when you make partner, you're still going to work 60 to 80 hours a week. It's a very unique individual who's actually going to stick it out and enjoy that type of workflow. And we're ignoring, you know, the other 95% of the world. So what we do, instead of bringing on partners, I created this licensee model where once they are qualified enough, they have enough experience, we trust them that they're going to do a good job meeting with the clients. We create a separate entity and we actually become partners in their book of business. So I am a partner in their book of business, but they're not a partner in Insight Tax as a whole. This gives them ownership over their client base, which other firms, if you're just a W-2 employee, you're not going to have that level of ownership from that accountant as I do with my licensee model, because these guys now, they know, like, as I build this, it's an asset they can sell when they want to retire. If they want to give themselves a pay raise, they can choose to raise their prices, or they just bring on more clients, or, you know, maybe they outsource some of the work to our firm. But anyway, at the end of the day, the licensees get paid a percentage of their collections. And it goes up, but, you know, once they're billing more than $450,000-ish, I can't remember the exact number because I just changed it, they get 90% of the collections. It starts at around 50%, goes up to 90%. So, like, I have a couple team members in this scenario. The one, she is pregnant with her second child. She had her first child with us. She makes 300 plus grand a year. That's her take home. And she probably averages, during tax season, 45 hours a week. And outside of tax season, I'm willing to bet it's 30. I can't think of a single weekend that she's not going out glamping with her husband and family outside of tax season. And she is here long term. She's making way more money than she would anywhere else. 300 grand plus is actually higher than the national average for partner pay with accounting firms. And she's got a great life, which means those clients that are getting served by her are going to continue to be able to be served by her because she has no desire to go anywhere else because she has a great balance in her life. I try to stay away from the work-life balance thing because it's not a 50-50 thing, and I think we use the word balance incorrectly there, but she has a great makeup of how much time she spends doing work and how much time she can have doing things that she really enjoys doing. And we have three others in that model. But the beauty is that any accountant who comes into our firm has that as an option, and they can see that. It's like, wow, in 5 to 6 years, sometimes sooner, depending on how much experience they have coming in, I could have that. I'm like, yeah. Yeah, you can.
I love it. It's like a reverse engineered.
So how do you split the costs?
Well, so we don't. We take on all the costs, which is why we take the percentage that we take.
Yeah.
Okay. So basically all the staff one, blah, 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 they're all under your insight. And then these people who are licensees.
Okay. Yeah. So we provide 20 hours of accounting support a week to the licensees. That's built into their percentage that we take. Anything above that, they pay for the cost of it. So I have three of the four who pay, you know, anywhere from $1,000 to $2,000 a month in their expenses for their business, covering like the labor that I have. They're basically just reimbursing me. I don't mark it up on them.
And then you pay for all the software, all the insurance, everything like that for them. And you're basically doing it's like a brokerage model. Like if you work at a Wells Fargo kind of. Or.
So I have insurance that covers their work, but they also need to get their own E&O insurance on their own level. But at their level, it's pretty inexpensive. It's like less than $2,000 a year.
That's interesting. It sounds like you're creating more work because it sounds like you're going to have a bunch of extra partnerships to do.
Well, they probably do their own taxes.
They do their own taxes, yeah.
Yeah.
And so your percentage, is it the firm's a percentage owner, or you yourself are a percentage?
Yeah, the firm is the owner. And
so basically they all roll up under you.
That's right.
And who does all the accounting to make sure that their hours and all that stuff is right?
We don't track the licensee's hours.
But for the extra things, like they get 20 hours of staff time, but if it's more, they have to pay.
Yeah, so we in our time tracking system, which was T-Sheets and Intuit bought it. I don't know what they call it now. They track the client they're working on and the professional. So it's just an easy report for me to pull.
It's just tagged a certain way. So you can just run one report on how many hours they worked on that.
Yeah.
It sounds very, very, very similar to Paget. Paget's a franchise, and they're experiencing some growing pains now for offices that are over a certain amount. It sounds like you've at least got that figured out. You just adjusted the 450 mark to where that phases into it. Is it a discount or is it an increase in what they keep? I think it's a reversal of how they're tracking it. Like basically how an office grows big enough, you get a discount on your royalty versus an increase in your revenue share. right?
Yeah, probably the same concept, just taken from a different angle. So like,
sure.
I figured the reason I keep it at 90% that the max they can make is there's always 10% cost. I mean, I could probably argue and look, if I really wanted to get into detail, I might be losing money a little bit on the other. But I also know from a standpoint of billings, the way our model is set up, most people, you know, 500 to 650,000 is likely the range that most licensees are going to end up at anyways, because they only have so much capacity as well. But yeah, that was the idea. I want them to be motivated so that at some point they're like, I'm basically keeping everything. I mean, if you look at the industry average.
You don't want them to just go out on their own. At a certain point,
they
get to the where, what do I need to pay them anything?
Mm-hmm. Like what am I getting from Insight? Like if they're maxed out at 90, we are making about 125 grand making. Our revenue split is 125
revenue
grand.
Revenue-wise.
Mm-hmm. Revenue, right. All of our audience understands revenue is not the same as profit, which is always
hopefully.
The case.
Hopefully.
But yeah, so I want to be it where it's like, yes, I want you to see that there's a markup. You could technically go out on your own and probably have an operation that's less than 125 grand. Yeah, that's absolutely true. But what you're adding is the headache of being the owner, having to know all the backend stuff that we do, having to know when is it appropriate to update. Like, for example, if we move to Intuit Tax Online, you know, they wouldn't have spent the time to do that. So we continue to add efficiencies and make their life easier. And so they're paying the markup because they know that they don't want that headache. And most of them suck at it, to be honest. I mean, you probably have some audience owners listening right now. They're like, yeah, I really love the tax work. And now that I'm in the business, I realize
I hate managing people.
Exactly.
I hate, like, most of it is managing people.
You've done the brokerage model. It's very smart. Like, just
so there's
let people
other...
be under the brokerage. You do all the back end stuff and provide the support.
So there's no standard. There's no standard in our industry. And I feel like there will be eventually, but you've got a franchise model with Padgett. There's not too many others that do that. You've got Dark Horse CPAs, which does something similar. I don't even know exactly what they do. You've got Breakaway Bookkeeping that does it on the bookkeeping side. High Rock, I think, started something they call Nucleus. So it's, you know, there's a lot of different offerings out there for CPAs that don't want to run a, it's almost like people that don't want to be an entrepreneur, don't really want everything that has to do with owning a business.
But they want the benefit of being the business owner.
Yes.
Yes.
We solve that. Some ownership. So what,
So are you now targeting, is your goal to grow that? Like find the one-off firm owner and
I would love to find solopreneurs who are like, I love what I do. I hate the business side of it. We can make their life so much easier. So we actually finally got a course approved by NASBA to be CE. And so we're going to start, in fact, it's running right now. It's a DIY thing. The idea is hopefully we get enough people through that we can start communicating with them. There's a better model out there. Because all the models, Scott, your advantage is you talk, this is like you do this industry, right? I was familiar with two of them.
Oh, he does the industry.
Right, like Dark Horse, Pageant. Pageant, I learned because of you. Dark Horse, I had heard before. Those other names I'd never heard of. So there's a lot of people out there.
But Pageant, it's completely different, though, because you're providing actually the back office support. Like,
But it's an option.
Pageant's more on the advertising side. And
honestly, no, Ackerman. The way I describe Pageant versus the way somebody that is just a small shop that has 200,000 or 300,000, they lean on Pageant for a lot of back office stuff or a lot of tax support type things that they don't do. So the smaller offices tend to lean more on the, like when you grow big enough, that's when you have to have an internal team. For me, I got a management team. I've got everything that I can handle my own marketing.
But does Pageant give you staff people?
Pageant doesn't do shit for me.
Well, I'm saying,
I'm at the point now where I've grown
not
out
you,
of it.
But yeah. I'm saying like, if you're starting out, do they give you staff people?
They give you people to support you. And if you need it, they can pretty much handle your shit. Like I've had people that got sick and their Pageant came in and ran their office for them because they were in the hospital or doing or something. So they have people that can come in and pretty much run it.
I like John's model though, which is basically you're not branded to.
It's the micro office.
You're basically, you're running yourself under an umbrella, like a clearinghouse. Yeah.
Yeah, John's got a bunch of micro offices.
It's really smart. I wish I would have thought of that.
Well, you still can think of it. There's not that many.
No, like John said, I don't need to, but John's already got it.
I can't patent it. We looked into that, apparently.
Can't patent it. Well,
it's a trade secret, right? Like it's like Coca-Cola, right? They can't patent the formula, but they can keep it in a trade secret format where, you know, no one knows exactly how to make it themselves.
There's a lot of intermingling of, this is like, it's like how Canopy tried to come in. And once they got a little too deep, you were just like, all right, let's cut this off here.
Listen, you know, Canopy, you could have given Canopy all the secrets.
Ackerman's trying to get all the secrets right here.
They would have still blown $300 million. It's totally fine.
Ackerman's really trying to get deep in here. And I think you're sharing a lot.
I think what you're doing is really cool. I'm interested to know what are some of the things that have not gone well with this.
Well, I can tell you the first licensee that I had, which based on our separation agreement, I can't even tell you his name for another so many years.
Let's put it on the calendar.
Get you back. Yeah, we'll come back for that.
We agreed to not disparage each other in our settlement agreement. When I first made the agreement, I was coming from another firm who I felt like took complete advantage of me. And I wanted to make sure that I was never going to be that greedy owner who just sucks the life out of people. So unfortunately, as a business owner, I made a contract that was very favorable to them and had very limited protections for me. And so we've since reversed that where it's a fair contract, but I have protections in there that aren't going to put me out of business if I need to get rid of a licensee because the way they're representing the Insight Tax brand is not appropriate. And so we have things like that now in the contract. The initial payment agreement, I also was even more generous than I am with the current model. And so I had to go, and at the time we had three licensees, and I basically had to lay out for them, hey guys, I did a 5-year forecast three different ways. And while the numbers are slightly different, the outcome's the same. The company is going to be a lot bigger, but my personal take home is going to be the exact same as it in 5 years from now than it is now, based on the percentage of revenue that you guys get. So I gave them the option. I said, honestly, it's just not worth it to me to put in the amount of work that's going to happen over the next 5 years for nothing. And so I'm giving you the option. You can buy me out and you guys can run the firm and like I'll go on my merry way, or I need to restructure your payment agreement, which for all of them was a equivalent of a $40,000 annual cut. And they all agreed to the cut.
So you sidestepped the partnership.
Yeah.
Sidestepped it by giving them all of these contracts.
Well, I wouldn't say you sidestepped it.
Well, that's what they, you gave them the option. You were like, well, you guys can buy me out.
You've shifted it. You've
sidestepping
is
shifting.
In a different way, so they're more in control of their piece, but you're in control kind of the overall.
Yeah,
processes.
And they're in complete control.
You're the
control.
CEO. You're the business owner. You know, you still are running.
But it's
and
allowing
operating.
Them to run their firm the way running
that they want,
how they want to run it. Mm-hmm. Like I think that's because everyone likes to do stuff slightly differently.
They can. They like, and they know that when they do that, they just let their admin, who's assigned to them, know. Our team knows. And so they want to take a month off. We will cover the client communication for them while they're out. So the client doesn't necessarily feel like a hit where it's like, I don't know if you guys ever pick up clients this way. We get a few where it's, hey, yeah, the reason I'm switching is because I can't get a hold of my accountant. I just,
that happens all the
they
time.
They disappear for months. We will get complaints. We've trained our clients almost too good where if they don't hear from us in for a week, I'm getting emails like, hey, I emailed this person like a week ago. I haven't heard anything back. Other people are like, yeah, I haven't heard from him for 2 months. It's fine. I know he'll get back to me.
Yeah.
Some people are like that. They've accepted that. So this is, they have the balance of freedom and money. And it's the balance that they're okay with, that they find acceptable. Because they're going to give up a lot of their freedoms if they have to manage and run every other part of their professional life.
Yeah.
And you're handling and managing a part of their professional life for a percentage, for a fee.
That's right.
And a fee that they have seen value in and that they value enough to commit to it. And I don't know if it's like a term sheet that they sign or a certain amount of time or if it's open-ended. I'm curious about that part of it too. But whatever they find is the right amount of money that they feel like they should be making at this stage in their career. They're in control of making more, but the freedom part and the time, you're not in control of that to a certain degree. It ends up eating more of your time if you want to make more and you want to scale up and grow a smaller firm. This is dope.
I love it. We need to do a follow up. I have so many more questions.
So many more questions. You got stuck in the weeds here, Ackerman.
No, I because it's interesting.
Yeah, I like it. So, John, where can listeners find you if they think they like this model and they want to hear more?
Maybe they're a solopreneur that wants to join Insight.
I would say
insightful listeners.
Do we get a commission?
Insightful listeners.
We should at least get a sponsorship.
Somebody else got.
If
paid
someone
for
signs
this
up,
one.
We should get a sponsorship.
Okay, what do you sponsor? But
no, we're not
sponsor
doing
the
anything
podcast.
Like that.
Oh.
Fuck that. No, I'm kidding. Okay. I'm kidding. He jokes.
That's how you sell, Scott. That's how you make money.
We're
selling on the pod.
If someone charge people to come on the pod, we didn't charge John.
No. I'm not saying that. I'm saying it's a good. It's cool. If I was a solo entrepreneur, I'd like to learn more about it because, running your own firm sucks. I'd rather be under somebody but still be able to control my own life. It sounds great.
Yeah, I mean,
Can you let him answer the damn question?
I mean, I would just have my licensees tell people, because if I'm saying it, people are like, well, I mean, it's your business. But I'm telling you, my licensees have such a happier life than when they were working at other firms.
We'll run an ad one day where
we need a new name though. Licensees. I think we need to rebrand the licensee.
I kind of like it. Insightful licensee.
It's a licensee sounds like they're printing license plates at the jail.
Insight.
I don't know.
It's not black and white. I wrote a tagline early on. I didn't write any more, but insight. It's not black and white.
It needs to be insightly people, or I don't know. Something.
So anyways,
we'll work on
if
it.
Someone wants to know more information, I'll just have them email me directly, John, J-O-H-N, at insighttax.com.
And make sure you spell it right.
I-N-C-I-T-E.
We'll put it in the show notes. And what about if we want to follow you on social media?
Yeah, at insighttax is kind of all of our stuff.
Cool.
And
you're
if
not
you
a social media
and
guy
if you
yourself,
visit,
are you?
I have an in-house
marketing
Canopy,
team. Yeah.
Cool.
Yeah, if you're visiting Canopy, just go over to his office and steal all his secrets.
That's right.
If you're visiting Canopy, is that what
it was funny when I'm like,
you can go to Ogden, you can visit the IRS service center.
Oh, it's a great vacation. I mean, you have Park City, which is close enough you can go skiing in the wintertime. But
this is like my last week how we're going to do the tax vacations. Yeah, like we were going to go to like the Cayman Islands and the Isle of Man. We can do Utah.
Now we can go
Canopy,
a tax vacation.
IRS.
The IRS, Canopy.
There's other
Insight.
Software out there too. I can't think of it, but.
Reach is out there.
Reach is out here. Yeah. I know Justin.
Utah's a hotbed.
You can go visit Greg Kite. He's out there too.
Greg Kite. Mm-hmm. I don't know
on
him personally,
but
I've
fraud
seen his
podcast.
Stuff.
Yeah. So,
all right, John,
cool.
This has been amazing. We're going to have you back for sure because I have a lot of follow-up stuff. This was amazing. You're doing
Appreciate
amazing
you
work.
Coming on, yeah. Ackerman thought this was an amazing conversation. I enjoyed it as well.
I loved it.
Glad it wasn't too boring for you,
Thanks,
Scott.
JB. No, it wasn't too boring. Okay, we didn't go too deep into the tax code. But
Once you said that code section, he glazed over for...
I don't know. I think I'm going to rent my place out for 14 days. It's got to be less than 14 days.
Less than 14.
Days? Less than 14. I'm going to rent my place out for 12 because 13 is probably
once a month. And then when I come to play golf, that's our meeting.
Awesome. All right, John.
Okay. Thanks.
See you.